Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good morning. Here we are, starting a little late, but I will get this recorded so you can listen to it later. I am recording today from my outside office, aka my deck. It's a beautiful day. The wind is blowing. You might hear birds. You might hear dogs. You might hear vehicles. But that's what happens when you sit outside. Welcome to Perinatal Ponderings. My name is Winona, and I am your host, facilitator, guide down the perinatal trail. I am owner of the North Star Perinatal Center, where I have classes and courses for both parents and professionals. And following this month, I'll talk a little bit more about my perinatal and infant support specialist course. We'll have registration opening, hopefully in July, for cohort 2, which will start in October. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. I also provide support for parents through Nurturing Expectations, which is both my birth support, lactation support, postpartum support, kind of that more individual support for parents in this area, also through video calls. So if you don't live near me, that's sad because I always like to meet people, but I also do video consults anywhere in the world if I can help you out. You can find that information at www.nurturingexpectations.com and about the parenting programs at www.northstarperinatalcenter.ca. And I have been working this week on getting some online classes up, and you'll find that information on my website. I have my prenatal class up right now, and that's at thinkific.com is the platform for that. And this is a course I put together a couple years ago now, and so I'm giving you a discount on that because I am in the process of upgrading and then adding some more options for breastfeeding education, baby education, infant, newborn, all those kind of fun stuff. So once we get that up all on the website, I encourage you to check that out. So today I thought we would wander down the lactation trail. I'm putting on my IBCLC hat. And so it'll be just a little different program today, kind of just me talking. I mean, I know I talk every time, but I just want to cover kind of the beginning of breastfeeding information that I might give in one of my classes, kind of introducing you to that. Maybe I'll go back to the beginning, which is always a good place to start. I'm going to go back to the year 1990, I guess that was a long time ago, when I became pregnant with our first baby. And I'm really trying to remember. I was in a small town in southeastern Saskatchewan, so not kind of any kind of mainstream anything. I always assumed I would breastfeed. I grew up around animals and on farms and ranches, and that's what moms did for their babies, right? They fed their babies. Sometimes I remember when I was younger, we lived on a ranch that had sheep and cattle, and there was a few baby sheep. Sometimes the sheep would have two or three babies, and they would pull one off so the mom could nurse the other babies, and we would help bottle feed them. But that was kind of the rare exception. I don't ever remember really anyone saying to breastfeed or not to breastfeed. I just kind of, I was young. I guess I probably thought I knew everything, which I would tell my younger self, no, you actually don't know everything. When I had my baby, my first baby, so this would have been in 1991, years ago in a small town hospital run by, I think the nuns were still running it back then, you would spend about a week after your bath. Nothing was wrong. They would just keep you for a week where they would bring the baby to you because, of course, back then the babies were in the nurseries, which is a whole other topic. But they would bring the baby to you and make sure that you were comfortable breastfeeding. So I don't remember seeing any kind of handouts of baby artificial baby milk or any bottles or nothing. They just assumed you would be breastfeeding and did what they could do to support you. So not everything way in the past was horrible, just as everything in today's present is not horrible. But of course there was, you know, separating mom and baby, keeping them separate was not ideal. But once I got home, of course, I started to breastfeed. And so I have many breastfeeding stories from all five of my kids. And as I started to learn more about breastfeeding, I kind of went, oh man, I could have done things a little differently. But we all muddled through together. And I was never discouraged to not do it. I was always supported with that by my husband and those around me. So that was really helpful for me as a young mom. As I began to support women through the birth process, I, of course, knew breastfeeding was important. Of course, the majority of mothers do want to breastfeed. And so I would support them. Now, sometimes there was, you know, most of that support was just through my own experiences and how I handled things and some of the things we read. I found that doula trainings and childbirth support specialist trainings didn't have a huge focus on breastfeeding. And often we said, well, send them to someone who does. And really there wasn't many people in the community that could provide much breastfeeding support. So I began to be more interested in learning more. I became a Lalechi League leader, which I really enjoyed. We had some really good groups, really good questions. I loved supporting the moms and them supporting each other. That was pretty huge to be able to be around women of different stages on their breastfeeding journey, as well as their own experiences and what they did and what helped them and kind of talking about that. So I really enjoyed doing that, but really wanted to be able to provide a little bit more support and knowledge and expertise to clients and women in my community. And so I began to pursue becoming an IBCLC. So that stands for International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. So when I first started out in the doula world, and most people were like, what's a doula? What do you do? That's so weird. Or that's so cool. Depends who you're talking to. And I found that I was always explaining, like, what is that? And same with the IBCLC, which I find interesting, is that a lot of people don't know what that is. So as I took, and because I didn't start out as a medical practitioner, I of course had to take classes and do extra things, which I really did enjoy because things started to kind of pull together. And sorry, I'm outside. The dogs saw something. So if I yell at the dogs, sorry for that. So I began that journey, and I was really kind of proud of myself gave myself a little pat on the back when I took the IBCLC test and passed. I'm like, whoa, that's so cool. But I've really learned a lot and learned that as an IBCLC, I'm able to give that extra kind of professional expertise to women and kind of understand how the mother-baby relationship works and can really dive deep into some of those topics that honestly the medical community is not too interested in. So I just want to introduce you today to some thoughts on breastfeeding and some thoughts that I've kind of gleaned from Jennifer Toe, who's an IBCLC, and a bunch of other professionals who's a bit of my mentor, and reads the research and understands, and just incredible source of knowledge for those of us who want to give some more to our clients. So here's a quote from Carol Cucci from the Union of Ontario Indians. This is in 1995. And this is a quote from her. A community and nation that takes the responsibility of breastfeeding seriously, that honors and respects the needs of the birthing woman to have the time and support they need in order that breastfeeding is established, is a nation that cares about the long-term health of its people. It's a really important quote. There's many quotes. There's peace on earth begins at birth. That was Robbie Davis Floyd, perhaps. Someone can correct me. But really understanding that the process of birth leads to the process of breastfeeding has a huge impact on that. So what do we know about breastfeeding and the effects on the mom and baby? So we know that breast milk is the optimal food, or the ideal food for newborns and infants. It gives infants all the nutrients they need for healthy development. It is safe. It contains antibodies that help protect infants from common childhood illnesses, such as diarrhea and pneumonia, which are two of the primary causes of child mortality across the world. So a lot of time when you hear statistics about breastfeeding, child mortality, the impacts is often in a worldwide thing, right? So we have developing countries and developed countries. Breast milk is, of course, readily available and affordable. And so this really ensures that the infants get adequate nutrition. So for the child, it provides perfect nutrients, right? It all comes in a pretty package, as they say. It reduces the impacts of infection. Oftentimes in families, the kids are sick or the dad's sick, the mom's not feeling well, and the breastfed baby is just fine. So, and it's like, what's everyone's problem? It promotes optimal brain development. It provides special protection for the premature or ill infant, especially. And thankfully, they're starting to get that way with premature babies, to be skin to skin, practice kangaroo care and breastfeed. And of course, no surprise to those of us that know, but often a surprise to people in that system, is that it improves outcomes. It reduces the chance of obesity long-term, contributes to a lifetime of good health. So we have to remember that what begins at birth, what happens at birth and how the baby is fed will impact them for life, physically, emotionally, body, mind, and spirit. That is going to impact them. Adults and adolescents who are breastfed are less likely to be overweight or obese, and less likely to have type 2 diabetes and perform better on intelligent tests. And I know some people have an issue with that one because they're like, I formula fed my baby and he's smart. Yes, of course he is. not denying that, but we know that there is some differences a lot of differences in the breastfed versus formula-fed baby. For the mother, it improves food security, right? We all know that breast milk substitutes, artificial baby milk often are expensive, and we've had over the past year or so a lot of recalls as well as a lot of shortages. So for mom, it improves food security. It also reduces the risk of breast and ovarian cancer. It decreases the risk of osteoporosis, and it increases maternal infant bonding. It helps to reduce, then this is in the mother, right? So it helps to reduce type 2 diabetes and decreases the risk of postpartum depression. Exclusive breastfeeding is often associated with not a fail-safe method, It still happens because there's a lot more to it, but a natural method of birth control. Exclusive, do you hear that, day and night breastfeeding. 98% protection in the first 6 months after birth. So it's important to remember with that one is that it's exclusive, so that's no bottles and no skip feeds in that. So that can help with that. It reduces the risk. We already said that, postpartum depression. Now, moms can still get postpartum depression, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. For the family, it's cost-effective, as we talked about. It's less, has less environmental impact, so breastfeeding is like go green team. It decreases healthcare costs. It contributes to long-term healthcare savings, so healthier people. One study shows that a cost savings of around $3.6 billion a year could be saved if babies were exclusively breastfed. There's a lower percentage of hospital readmission for breastfed babies, 4% for breastfed babies, as opposed to 80% for babies who use artificial baby milk. It prevents injuries. So the, environmentally, there's BPA chemicals, and of course we've heard about that for many years now, but those chemicals are used in the cans of artificial baby milk. There's contamination. Once you open a can, if it's not stored or used properly, there's often babies that get sick from that. There's a lack of proper mixing techniques. So for mothers who are unable to or choose not to breastfeed, it's important that they are given proper information on how to use the artificial baby milk, how to prepare it properly, store it, and feed infants properly. This is often missed. Mothers are given samples out in the hospital, which that's a whole other show on how that goes against the breast milk substitute code of conduct. It's really important to understand if you aren't able to do all the things using breast milk, using donated breast milk, that kind of thing, or you just are choosing not to breastfeed, then you need to understand how to use that properly. And in third world countries, this has really caused a lot of mortality in infants because mothers are told not to breastfeed, are given samples, and because of the cost, in some countries, the cost of a can of formula is a month's wages. They dilute it, right? They don't put enough in, so it's not mixed properly. In the Western cultures, we're more likely to overfeed than we are to underfeed. So it's important that as communities that families are supported and that the rates are low. Right now the rates are still low. And as a result, there's still a high health care cost to countries and families. So something to think about with that. So remember that human milk is for human babies, designed especially for them. It's species specific, right? It has different levels of fat, different levels of proteins, carbs, all those kind of things. It changes over time. The composition changes, right, from morning to night. Excuse me. From feed to feed. It's always changing to meet the needs of the baby. Remember that colostrum cells, they're always in breast milk. So it just kind of morphs. It kind of changes. Colostrum is milk, just to remind you. And, of course, the difference depends on the needs of the baby. So premature baby will have different milk composition than a full-term healthy baby. So the breast milk meets the needs of the babies. Baby's saliva, so there's a two-way communication going on between mom and baby. When baby is at the breast feeding, it sends messages to the mom's body on what kind of milk is needed. It is not just a product, it is a process, right? A living food. Medically, of course, breast milk decreases the risk of illness from diarrhea, meningitis, respiratory illness, uterine infections, anemia, and provides that protection against SIDS, allergies, and cardiovascular disease, among other things. It's well recognized, right? Everyone kind of knows that breast milk is custom-made. It changes as baby grows. It's easier to digest than artificial milk. It helps to protect against disease. So for healthy term infants, I'm really, excuse me. For healthy term infants, exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months is recommended by the World Health Organization, by Health Canada, by the Canadian Pediatric Society, by the Dietitians of Canada, and by the Public Health Agency of Canada, which is where a lot of these statistics, excuse me, and information comes from. Around 6 months, not 4 months, not 3 months, not 5 months, not even necessarily 6 months, it might be longer, but around that time. And another time we'll talk about how do I know my baby's ready to start eating. Then we can introduce complementary foods and continue with breastfeedings for 2 years or more. So these are the recommendations from the top health organizations. One of the recommendations that I do agree with for that. So most women breastfeed their baby soon after birth. 89% of Canadian mothers initiated breastfeeding soon after their child's birth. So this was in 2012. In 2003, it was about 85%. So we've gone up a little. We're higher than the states, which is only a 77% rate of initiating breastfeeding, but it's lower than countries like Norway, which is 95%, and Australia even, which is 92% initiation rate. Why? I want you to think about that. Among Canada's provinces and territories, breastfeeding rates range from anywhere, only 5% in Newfoundland and Labrador. In BC and the Yukon, it's about 96%. So again, why? Think about the communities and the culture in those areas. The rates of mothers who initiate breastfeeding has really changed little since 2003, except in Quebec. Where it would be kind of like a drastic increase, but it went from 76% to 89%. So I wonder what happened in Quebec. Did they have a campaign? Were the people in the hospitals taught breastfeeding? Were they part of the baby-friendly hospital initiative? Again, another topic for another day. So let's think about why. So for those mothers who chose not to breastfeed, 11% tended to be younger, had less formal education, more likely to be single, so really didn't have the support. And a couple of the main reasons why they may not breastfeed was that bottle feeding was seen as being easier, about 25% thought that, or there was a medical condition of the mother and child, about 23%. So Health Canada really encourages that exclusive for first 6 months. Now, prior to 2004, where you'll see different stats, the recommendation had been to do so for the first 4 to 6 months. So this is why we still have people who were trained, right? So think about your pediatricians, doctors, nurses, when they were trained and what was taught, because you usually don't pursue further education. Some people do, for sure, but a lot of people revert to what they were taught. So a lot of times you'll have moms, oh, the doctor said I could start at 4 months. Well, this was a previous recommendation that, of course, thankfully they have changed. So about 26% of moms in Canada breastfed exclusively for 6 months. Okay, so that, of course, was up from 17% in 2003. So again, you can see when the training changed, when the recommendations changed, then we saw an increase. But still, that's less than one-third are still breastfeeding exclusively for the first 6 months. So when people are like, oh, you push breastfeeding, I'm like, eh, not really, because we have a very low breastfeeding rate in Canada. About half the mothers went exclusively for about 4 months, which was up from about 42%. So that's a little bit of a rise. But still, we hit that 4 month, and there's lots of stuff happening developmentally at that stage, and as well with moms, right? So you have to think about some of those things. The World Health Organization talks about complementary food. So these are foods that are learning tools, right? They're complementing. They're not replacing the nutritional value of breast milk. Breast milk nutrition does not decrease changes to meet the needs of the child. So food before one, just for fun. So we're just learning about food. We're interested in food. And so we want to start to introduce healthy, wholesome foods to our babies. And of course, that's a cultural thing. Okay. Breastfeeding should begin within an hour of birth. Moms and babies should be given that time to start to learn, right? It's an art, as Lailechi says, the art of breastfeeding. It should be done on demand, whenever the baby wants it, day and night, right? There's a 24-hour clock, not a 12-hour clock. So it should be as baby needs. And bottles and pacifiers should be avoided if possible. If we need to substitute milk for whatever reason, and if that is also another show, we could do lots of shows, or we will do lots of shows, we can use cup feeding or spoon feeding. Passies that are given, or suckies or dummies, whatever you want to call them, before breastfeeding is established, will often interfere in the ability to notice the feeding cues. Okay. Breastfeeding is established, the baby may or may not want, right? It's usually the mother's choice, not the baby's choice, to have a pacifier or a breast substitute. That's what we're doing. They were made to substitute the breast, not the other way around. A little bit on artificial milk. We know it doesn't contain antibodies that we find in breast milk. Those long-term benefits cannot be replicated with artificial milk. We know that when it is not properly prepared by using unsafe water, so when you are boiling water. It's the water that needs to boil. Okay. So that's an important part of the process. Or our equipment isn't sterilized. There is potential presence of bacteria in the formula. Malnutrition, as we talked about, in third world countries where there isn't access to the artificial milk or to clean water even, it could be, you could over-dilate the formula. That's birth, whole other story. And then times moms will try to use formula to substitute and try to return to breastfeeding, and that may not often be an option without support for that, because now we need to build up the milk supply again. Breastfeeding affects women and families worldwide. It's happening across economic, political, cultural, and social spectrum. So the rates are really determined, right? So I said, think about why we have these rates. It's really interesting. But they're determined by health issues, by communities' involvement, education, maternity leave. So in Canada, we really... I will say we have been blessed with the system that allows longer maternity leave. Well, in the States, which is a huge part of their problem down there, is that 6 weeks return to work. It's so difficult for mothers to try and continue breastfeeding and to heal, like they're not even healed and they have to go back to work. So really big concern down there. So breastfeeding rates determined by the availability of health services or the support of trained professional lactation consultants. Mental health factors, again, there's no support, or environmental factors such as their housing situation, what's going on there. So rates are, it's not that women can't breastfeed. It's not that babies don't want to breastfeed. It's that we have these whole other issues and concerns going on around us. There has been a decline of breastfeeding worldwide, because if you think about it, for generations, we have 1,000 generations of excellence in birth and breastfeeding, right? That's how babies survived and thrived in the world. But the decline can really be pinpointed on the aggressive marketing practices, the cultural and social biases, and the health practices used across the globe. Okay, so the marketing practices of the artificial baby milk manufacturers, and there is a trail with those guys, and there is some really good books, some good information, some good documentaries, all sorts of ways that we could see that those aggressive marketing practices have really interfered with breastfeeding and caused a lot of health issues. Our culture and society biases. So especially in the Western culture, where breasts are seen as sexualized things and not necessarily made to feed and help humans survive and thrive. So we have really gotten away. We still, what is it, 2023? And I know every generation thinks that it's like the best generation, but we still see women who are told to cover up when they're breastfeeding in public, who are told to leave spaces when they are feeding their child. Doesn't matter if you breastfeed or not. And so we still have this bias against mothers, because that's what it is, against mothering and against nurturing. And our health practices, our birth practices, what happens when we're pregnant? What happens if women are birthing in the hospital? What kind of information and support are they given there? And even moms are told to quit breastfeeding when there's certain procedures for mom or baby. And so there's all these health practices that have really interfered and been a part of this decline. huge is the challenges that moms have and the lack of follow-up support. So those challenges, many women stop because they have sore nipples, they have inadequate milk supply, they perceive that they don't have enough milk, because we perceive feeding our infants based on, we are bottle feeding artificial milk culture. And so we base on the amount that we may or may not be making and think, well, we're not making enough milk, so I need to substitute. Our perception that baby is not, he needs more, I need to top him up. Or they're having difficulties. So it'll just be easier if I don't do this. And a lot of that, of course, is the support, information, and education that is not getting out there. So we can help improve these rates, and many of us are working one family at a time towards that. But it really needs to be evidence-based, best practice, prenatal education, which is why I'm excited to get my online breastfeeding class up and going, so you can learn these things before you have the baby, and not while you're, oh, I have a new baby and one more thing to figure out. Mother peer groups, support groups, really important to have. Having adequate maternity benefits. So, of course, a lot of women plan kind of their maternity leave, but that's important. Like, part of that leave is to spend time learning these techniques, these mothering skills. We need more. We have human rights legislation to protect working women, whether they're pumping at work or taking time to go breastfeed their baby, maybe working from home so they can breastfeed. If our culture really placed mothers is important, then they would support them in being home with their own child. Legislate marketing practices. So while there is a code for marketing of breast milk substitutes, it is not legislated. So in our country, we give lip service to it. But you will see in doctor's offices, pediatrician's offices, at the hospital, in your care packages that are handed out, in the maternity system itself, you will see different formula companies there. Maybe it's a poster on the wall. Maybe it's a pen or a pad of paper. And according to the code, we shouldn't see any of that stuff. We shouldn't be giving out samples, right? And so there's a lot of work still to be done. And just doing public awareness promotions, reminding people, right? And so those are all things to think about. So what is the biological process of growing and feeding a baby? So transitioning from placental feeding to breastfeeding, in essence, a new mother's mammary glands take over from the placenta to provide the development guidance to ensure a baby's genetic destiny is fulfilled. That's by Dr. Cregan, who is a molecular biologist. Sounds like a smart guy. So what do we have? Prolactin. So this is the hormone. It's the mothering hormone. It increases at night, so it works along with melatonin, serotonin, that kind of thing. It causes the alveoli in the breast to produce milk, and these levels, prolactin levels, are increased with skin to skin, right? So it's, you know, one solution, often the simplest, is be skin to skin at the breast. When there's skin to skin contact and suckling, right? Even if it's non-nutritive, so they're just suckling at the breast, that is all doing the job to increase breast milk. And of course, effective milk removal is the key for production. So making sure that when they are at the breast suckling, that milk removal is being done effectively for the baby and the mom. And mom will feel relaxed and sleepy, and so will baby, right? You should feel comfortable and relaxed. The baby has a little milk, cute little milk drunk look on him. And that's all due to prolactin. Remember that the breasts regulate the temperature for the baby and for the milk, always at the right temperature. And when baby is on skin to skin, mom's body regulates their temperature. Oxytocin, right? We all love oxytocin. Releases and contracts the alveoli. It causes the milk to flow down or the let down. And some women feel a forceful letdown, and some women not so much. So that doesn't mean necessarily you have more or less oxytocin. Everyone's bodies are different. But oxytocin helps to lower mom's blood pressure, right? The hormone of love. When we feel in love, everything feels better. It decreases anxiety. It helps promote bonding. So this is why postpartum care is super important and support postpartum. The gut of the baby is open after about 2 weeks, and the gut closes. So the idea of breast milk is that it helps to seal the gut, right? So what happens in the gut, and you'll hear a lot, it's a big thing because we've all figured this out, is that the gut is what promotes your immune system, right? Helps you stay healthy, but also mentally helps with anxiety and all sorts of things too. So that breast milk will seal the gut in a healthy way. Remember that the baby has a tiny tummy. So in the first 24 hours, these only possibly, right, these are all things that they've measured, and it's about 5 to 7 mils each feed, about a teaspoon. So babies will want to feed often in that first day, right? So baby has tiny cherry-sized tummy, approximately. In the first 24 hours, the milk volume is about calculated to be 7 to 123 mils. So the infant feeds, that's over the course of a day, right, the first 24 hours, about 7 to 14 mils at a feed, which is about 12 to 14 times in the first day. So just expect that. Lots. Baby on you. 24/7. By day 10, they're able to hold more. So the feeds might start to be able to eat more. Your mature milk has come in, and so they can hold a little more milk in their bellies. Remember that first milk colostrum provides high density of nutrition. So it's highly dense. It's high in immunoglobulins, your immune protection, and lactose and a laxative, right? So babies should be pooping. And I will try and just do a show on why babies need to poop and should be pooping all the time. Breast milk protein is easily digested and absorbed, which helps baby to poop. It helps to prevent infections and inflammation. It promotes growth. It promotes the probiotics and the prebiotics in the gut, right? This is why they should be pooping. If they have a healthy gut, mom has a healthy gut. So we want to get skin to skin immediately, which will help also to colonize the baby's gut, all that good bacteria. We have lots of backup systems, right? So if baby's born vaginally, they'll get a good wash of good bacteria, helps to seed the gut. Also being at the breast, skin to skin, and also receiving breast milk. So all these things are important components to help build a healthy gut. It promotes growth, promotes, I said that already. So proteins, fats, carbohydrates, hormones all help to enhance calcium and iron absorption. Leptin, it provides stem cells, it has vitamins, minerals, waters, and so much more. So all the perfect proportions that a baby needs. We do not need to give any other liquids or solids before 6 months. Breast milk has it all. In the summer months, they might want to feed more, but we don't need to give them water. Breast milk is all that they need. Almost half, about 45%, introduced other liquids when they were 3 months old or younger, probably based on someone saying that they should, right? Family, friends. Now, remember, we have a few generations that never breastfed. And so their understanding of breastfeeding is based on their own experiences. Often babies are given other liquids or solids because someone told them that babies were ready for solids or that they didn't have enough breast milk or they should add something to the bottle because he was still hungry, right? So instead of like, let's figure this out, that is not going to help their gut. So breastfeeding has to be learned. For some mother-baby dyads, it's easily learned, and for others, it takes longer. Many women encounter some difficulties at the beginning, but many of the routine practices, such as separation of mom and baby for any reason, using newborn nurseries, supplementing in the hospitals with infant formula, can make it harder for mothers and babies to breastfeed. Health facilities that support breastfeeding will avoid these practices and will have everybody trained and available. So we want to look and see, ask, is this facility, does this maternity services, do they provide a baby-friendly facility? And just see where they are on that. Many mothers who return to work abandon breastfeeding partially or completely because they don't have sufficient time or they don't have a place to breastfeed or they can't express and store their milk. So mothers need to be supported in having a safe and clean and private place in or near their workplace to continue breastfeeding and to also enable conditions at work like paid maternity leave, part-time work arrangements, or facilities for expressing and storing breast milk, and to have breastfeeding breaks can help. So, you know, will that be supported by people in your workplace, or will people complain because why does she get all those breaks, right? So it's a good thing to bring up to your employer to discuss, are we a baby-friendly breastfeeding workplace? How can you support me, because this is important work. Breastfeeding when starting solids should not be decreased, right? It's complementary. It's not the main source. Food should be given with a spoon or a cup. Babies do not ever need a bottle. Again, that's a manufacturing marketing that babies need bottles and like sippy cups and pacifiers. They don't. Food should be clean and safe and give baby time as they're learning. So just as we're getting to wrap this little talk up, I have some notes, some thoughts from some notes from Jennifer Toe on when was he or miserable or such a hard baby. So kind of some thoughts on that. So when we're looking at it from a biological perspective, what's the physiological norm of breastfeeding, it doesn't make any sense that a baby would just be colicky, like that's just the thing you should expect, or that they're just a bad baby, or that they're just, that's just normal, right? So do you have a good baby? Is your baby good? Like, what does that mean? It's really culturally what our expectations of babies are. So our expectations of, oh, yeah, my baby was colicky. I gave him gripe water, right? Or my baby's not a good baby because he wakes up at night and wants to eat. So it's really culturally how we view tiny humans. Some of the underlying conditions, the underlying reasons that this behavior can happen is that moms are stressed out in pregnancy, either by the maternity system or by family or friends or work, and that birth is highly medicalized in this country. Those really contribute to the behaviors of our babies and mothers' abilities to meet those needs and to understand those behaviors. Human infants are highly adapted to thrive in the environment of the mother's body when it's going on. So human babies, human infants are meant to survive and thrive on the mother. The mother's body is their environment. And when they're having trouble with that, then we need to look further and say, what else could be going on? Let's have a look at baby. Let's have a look at mom. Let's see if we could sort this out. They're designed to seek organization. So they're made to be able to shift. Just as adults, we should be able to shift from a sympathetic state to the parasympathetic state. And when you're looking at what that means if we are stressed out, we should easily be able to adapt and handle that stress and come back into the parasympathetic state, like relaxation, right? So if you think about adult humans and how some people, they get into a stress state and they stay there and they're super stressed all the time and they can't rest and relax. What does that do to your health? What does that, your mental health, physical health, right? And so we have babies who, for whatever reason, and we can sort that out, is they aren't able to come back into that. What they need is the mother's body. They need to be safe, feel safe in order to do that, right? So they're learning on our bodies. They're learning to shift between those states. Healing from pregnancy or birth trauma should be done with a reconnection of mom and baby, not a disconnection. So separating moms and babies does not help mothers heal from pregnancy or birth traumas. Now, when I'm saying traumas, it could be a little thing. It could be a big thing. It really depends on the mother and the baby and what their experience was and what happened in that process. And it's happening to, was it 1 in 5, 1 in 6 women have some form of trauma. And, of course, this is on a scale, but we can help repair the rupture. We can help repair that. The human body is resilient, right? And so there's always, I say, there's always hope. There's always choices, and there's always things out there. We have so many options, from even just co-bathing, being in the bathtub with baby, doing little rituals, being skin to skin, using remedies like Bach remedies, homeopathic remedies, herbal remedies, and body work, really important. These can help with reconnection, right? We want to reconnect with our babies. Colic is most common in westernized countries. Highly developed countries, and we have these. Remember, colic is not a medical diagnosis. It is a group of symptoms, and this, we just bunch them all together and call it colic, but it can often easily be resolved with some form of body work. Baby is out of sorts. How do we help them? How do we help them do, they can't go walk into a chiropractor by themselves. So how do we help them help resolve some of these symptoms and finding kind of the root cause of that? Swaddling techniques do not to the baby that we trust his cues, right? So they come out and we immediately make them into a baby burrito. That has been very detrimental in attachment and breastfeeding. So it's important to think, like, what are we doing with these babies? And so you often, people talk about all these different swaddles and all these different tools, teen bags, whatever you want to call them. But what we're doing is we're like, okay, baby, I don't really like your cues, or I don't trust what you're telling me. So if I swaddle you up tight, you'll quit doing that. And so we really need to think about why we're swaddling. Where have parents learned that it's safe or preferable to ignore and control babies? There's no evidence that shows it's safe to do so. So where do we learn that we need to swaddle, we need to stick a plug in them and put them in a bucket away from us? And that will help them to self-regulate. Where have we learned that from? Because the evidence doesn't show that, if you want to look at evidence. And we often will look at mothers and babies, right? Let's look at those babies that are well attached, what's going on there. And in cultures around the world, what's going on in those families? And why don't they have all these issues, right? Just because we live in Canada doesn't mean we got it all figured out yet. Most parents who seek medicalized postpartum or breastfeeding support are encouraged to use some form of non-responsive parenting as a means to manipulate their infant's behavior. So they're often encouraged to put the baby down, to ignore their cries, bad habits, because that's what, you know, that's part of control, is part of the medicalized system. We need to control people. We need to control infants. Pediatricians rarely have an understanding of the physiology of the mother and infant ecosystem. Okay? So they're not trained in breastfeeding. It's not part of their regular curriculum. Some, of course, will seek more information, but most pediatricians don't. They're looking for pathology. They're looking to deal in illness and disease in children. They should be telling parents the truth about what an infant needs, as well as the impacts of using artificial milk. If they're telling moms, oh, just feed them formula, they need to give the risks to doing that, as well as being able to refer them on to a lactation specialist. In utero, the infant's world is the mother's body, right? We have grown, we have nurtured, that's what the baby knows. When the baby is born, the mother's body is also its environment, right? 9 months in, 9 months on, we are carry animals. We are animals that humans as a species are meant to have our children, our babies on us as they're developing. So how can a swaddled, bundled up baby have the same experience and development than with a baby that has access to the warmth, breathing, rhythmic, soft, embracing, life-giving, and life-affirming body of the mother? Right? That's where babies need to be. Infants need to be mothered. But in our culture, mothers are told that that is not good for the baby to be mothered. Right? When we look at how women are treated as mothers in our culture, what does that look like? How do we know how people feel about that, right? By how they're treated in pregnancy, how they're treated in birth, how they're treated with breastfeeding, how they're treated and supported in wanting to stay home and mother their children. And we're seeing a decline in that respect for mothering, for women who want to mother. Babies have those tools to guide us in knowing and understanding and meeting their needs. They have the tools. They're telling us, right? Babies are smart. they're wired for communication. And we as mothers, we have those tools, those innate knowing. And we need to be supported in learning that and understanding that. You will often hear of mothers who have ill children or who have children who are struggling, who are looking for help and going from one place to the next, to the next, to the next. And no one listens to them. What do you know? You're just a mother, right? So we have to really build back this, Ooh, the joys of being in an outside office. That's Loki. I'll tell you more about him someday. Sorry. So, supporting mothering. Babies have need of vestibular stimulation. So, the need to move. Babies who have this high need, who need, you know, pacing the floor, right? I remember one of our kids, if you had to be moving with him, you really had to be. My husband would come home, I would pass the baby, and he would pace the floor with him, right? They have this high need. Why? Why do they have that? That can be exhausting. Of course, parents are exhausted, right? So if I had known, this is why I'm sharing this knowledge, because if I had known, but one simple solution is a knowledgeable chiropractor or cranial sacral therapist who understands infants and does a session with them. This will really help because your baby is telling you there's something out of whack. When I stop moving, I am uncomfortable. Why is that? Okay. Think of adults. Often if you have your backs out, your necks out, oftentimes you are, first of all, you're holding the injured part or the part that's sore, and oftentimes movement will help relieve that. If you're thinking about the birth process, movement will help relieve pain with that too. So think about that. Why are babies trying to tell us something? It's difficult for parents to find these other solutions when they seek advice from the medicalized system that looks for pathology and chooses stopping breastfeeding or cry it out or medication instead of some of these other solutions that would be more appropriate and more helpful for the mother-baby dyad. So rather than looking just for ways to cope for parents, we need to be providing options for healing the trauma, for integration to happen with the mother and baby, that connection that needs to happen. What are we teaching our infants by not meeting their basic needs? What is this going to teach them long term, right? They're going to grow up. So how's that going to impact their relationships as they grow up, as parents? And as dealing with their own infants. So parents really should be able to understand just the basics of the biological needs and imperatives of the mother-baby dyad and be supported to be able to thrive in the first year postpartum. So really part of understanding, not just the mothers, right? The mothers often instinctually know they need to be doing. But the partners, the families, the community, we all need to have a part in this. Of course, right, I've said all these things and there will be people who said, but of course there are those instances where there may be need of medical interventions. But those things should be the exception, not the rule, right? Yes, we have NICU babies. We need to look at why. Why do we have so many? Why do we have an increase in childhood illness and disease? Why are these things, right? And so your situation, yeah, it happened. In the moment, these are things that happen. But that doesn't mean we can't learn and share what we know, right? So really important for that. And so, yes, I hear the buts. I hear all the things. But we need to understand. We need to understand, and our communities, families, need to get behind women who this is part of their journey, right? And give them all the options and all the information in order to support them on their journey. So that is just a few of my introductory thoughts wandering down the lactation trail. If you are interested in learning more, let me know. Please reach out to me. You can find my contact information on my websites at www.NorthStarPerinatalCenter.ca, nurturingexpectations.com. Reach out to me through here. I am available for video consults or in-home consults if you're close by. If you are interested in becoming a perinatal and infant support specialist, definitely reach out to me. Our first main topic in that training is breastfeeding and supporting infant feeding. And how do we do that? It's so important. If you understand that, I think then you will understand the importance of what happens during birth, what happens during pregnancy, postpartum. Breastfeeding pulls all that together, the perinatal year together. So I don't have a poem for you today, I don't think. Oh, maybe I do here. Sorry for yelling at my dog. we are out in the country, and so there's no fence, so they do have to learn not to chase vehicles. Oh, I'm going to read this poem to you. This is called Being Born, and it's by Carl Sandburg. Being born is important. You who have stood at the bedpost and seen a mother on her high harvest day, the day of the most golden of harvest moons for her. You who have seen the new wet child dry behind the ears, swaddled in fresh garments, pursing its lips and sending a groping mouth towards nipples where white milk is ready. You who have seen this love's payday of wild toiling and sweet agonizing. You know being born is important. You know that nothing else was ever so important to you. You understand that the payday of love is so old, so involved, so traced with circles of the moon, so cunning with secrets of the salts of the blood, it must be older than the moon, older than salt. Being Born by Carl Sandburg. I hope you all have learned a little bit today. If you are interested in joining me and talking about your pregnancy journey or your birth journey or your breastfeeding journey or your postpartum journey, just sharing your stories with each other is really important. And hopefully I'll get some guests on. We'll see as we're turning into summer. I know everybody is busy, but I hope to keep on giving you some podcasts with information. If you'd like to join me in a discussion, if you have knowledge of something, I am always keen to hear, learn more. If what you do in your vocation or profession or career helps support moms and babies and families, definitely let's talk about it. Send me an email and we'll get it sorted out. So I appreciate you hanging in with me as I sit outside 23 degrees Celsius. It's supposed to rain, but they've been saying that for the last week. So we'll see if it happens or not. Sprinkled a bit yesterday. Anyway, thanks for joining me and have a blessed day, blessed week, and go be a blessing. Bye for now.